106.6.
Well, he's got to let you know he's one of your kind. But anyway, I'll finish off what Michael Hutchins was saying. That was In Excess of Needy Tonight. And I'm Dom Robinson, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, well, Dom Robinson, as you heard. It's a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, a look at what's new on TV, and news for all three. DVDFever.co.uk is a non-profit website and has recently had a revamp, so please do take a look. If you've got anything else to say here about anything you hear, if you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, I'll get my teeth in again, do get in touch via the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. What's coming up in the first hour? We look at all things to do with film. We've got a review of Mimic Director's Cut on Blu-ray. Then we've got the top 10 movie charts. Then we have the new cinema releases, including Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1 and How to Stop Being a Loser. We'll look at the new DVD releases, including Bridesmaids and Kung Fu Panda 2. We've got film news as well. So we start the first hour with a review of Mimic Director's Cut on Blu-ray. Now, Mimic is one of those films I've always meant to get around to watching, not least because it stars the achingly gorgeous Mira Sorvino in the lead role, and it also highlights the time when she was the darling of Hollywood for a few years, leading high-profile movies such as Romeo Michelle's High School Reunion and The Replacement Killers. The basis of the film is that there's a genetic engineering experiment which has gone seriously wrong. Here with the power to mimic and destroy everything in its path and bring a city to its knees, since something so powerful has been created that it's taken on a life of its own. Cockroaches are carrying something called Strickler's disease, and so Dr. Susan Tyler, Mira Sorvino, announces that they've created a special Judas breed of roach that will wipe out the rest of the cockroaches, and that this will sort out the disease for good, not least because their breed will only last a generation, and so will die out itself within 6 months. Easy peasy, yes? Well, not quite. Tension builds up nicely when some kids bring what they call a weird bug to Susan's attention, one that manages to shake not only the huge cornflakes box that it's in, but also shake her nerves as it gives her a shock when she tries to bring it out. Then throw into the mix a very weird man of sorts, always creeping about in the shadows, bringing about death and or mayhem to the proceedings. And finally, the revelation that the aforementioned bug was a baby one of her own Judas breed, and that 3 years have passed since they originally released. So despite them being bred as sterile adults, somehow they're breeding. Now, I don't know what happened to what stopped Sorvino being such a draw for the Hollywood, as she performs perfectly adequately here. There's also good support from Brit actor Jeremy Northam as a forensic better half, Dr. Peter Mann, Dr. Peter Mann. It's also Josh Brolin as the imaginatively named Josh, and Charles S. Dutton as the cop Leonard. Oh, and F. Murray Abraham turns up with a dodgy haircut to pontificate on whether Susan should have created the Judas breed in the first place. What makes the Judas breed bugs particularly creepy for me is that they make exactly the same sound as the antlion bugs do from Half-Life 2. Okay, so the game came out after the film, but I've experienced them the other way round, so that's why they have extra special resonance. With shades of the Alien saga, this is daft but entertaining nonsense, but at nearly 2 hours it does overstay its welcome. Too much of it is in the dark, making it difficult to see what's going on a lot of the time. Add to that, there's an intensely annoying kid amongst the cast. This is a big no-no for directors, well, in my book at least. He constantly plays the spoons, which, although it bears some relevance to the plot, it still becomes a massive irritation. Presented in the original theatrical ratio and in 1080p high definition, the picture looks perfectly fine when you can see what's going on, as described previously. The problems are either when it's too much in the darkness, or a lot of the time, or it just doesn't feel as sharp and detailed as a Blu-ray disc should. That could be because it's not given a chance to, due to the lighting. But while I therefore say that a Blu-ray presentation isn't essential based on this transfer, there's no other way you're going to get the director's cut of this film, because it's certainly not come out on DVD, it's just a Blu-ray only. Audio-wise, the film is presented in DTS 7.1 HD Master Audio. It does all the necessary perfectly well, whether it's gunshots, atmosphere, or directional sound effects. There are many more memorable movie audio tracks, however. Ta-da. The extras are as follows. We've got a video prologue with director Guillermo del Toro, which lasts about a minute. He's just introducing the director's cut. There's a featurette called Reclaiming Mimic. It's about 14 and a half minutes, where the director talks about the film and the suspense within. But with the lack of subtitles and his droning on, it soon becomes extremely boring. A Leap in Evolution, The Creatures of Mimic, that's nearly 10 minutes. This featurette shows some sketches and storyboard images, as well as how they settled on choosing cockroaches rather than beetles. And we also see the working models they used. It's Back to the Tunnels, The Making of Mimic. That's just over 5 minutes. It's not a particularly insightful segment here, as it's just very brief soundbites from all the key cast members, plus a mumbling Del Toro, all mixed with on-set footage. It's 5 minutes of deleted scenes, which is two plus an alternate ending. Now, the ending is slightly better than what we got in the film, but the two deleted scenes really aren't worth putting back in. It's also 6 minutes of storyboard animatics. There's six of them, just for the same number of scenes in the film. They do the job if you want additional information about the film's creation, though. It's also a gag reel of 2.5 minutes where actors corpse amongst the grim background. And finally, there's an audio commentary with director Guillermo del Toro. Film, I'd give it 6 out of 10. Picture, well, 7. Sounds 8, though, so that's good. Extras, pretty poor, just 4 out of 10 for them. So overall, it's 6 out of 10. So not a great release. They could have put a lot more into the extras. And the film itself, well, you've heard the problems with that. So, I mean, if you did like it, then maybe it's worth getting. I think the director's cut's got about 7 minutes extra on top of the original version. If you're desperate to see those extra 7 minutes, I couldn't tell you exactly what they are. You can always look them up online. But there you go. In a moment, we'll be having the top 10 movie charts. But first, we'll have a little bit of music, and we've got Madonna and Justify My Love. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now we have a look at the top 10 movie charts in this section. And I go through the US movie charts here because, as I said, I could never find a reliable source for the UK ones because the Internet Movie Database was always a bit hit and miss as to whether they updated it, you know. Anyway, the US ones. Number one, staying at number one, we got Puss in Boots. And the story takes place before Puss, Antonio Banderas, met Shrek and Donkey when he was a swashbuckling hero who protected the innocent. The film starts out with Puss escaping from a man who had had him in a cage. He narrowly manages to get away, and after blowing kisses to the female cat he was leaving behind, he makes his way to a town. After being taunted and then gaining the respect of the thugs there, Puss learns that two murderous outlaws, Jack, Billy Bob Thornton, and Jill, Amy Sedaris, have the magic beans, which hold an ancient power that can destroy the world. When Puss tries to take them away from the two outlaws, another cat with a mask interrupts and tries to get them as well. Both fail and escape, and Puss follows the cat back to a bunch of other cats, where they both have a dance fight and a sword fight, ending with Puss smacking her over the head with a guitar, which upsets the cat so much that she rips her mask off and reveals to a surprised Puss that she is, in fact, a woman. Puss then meets Humpty Dumpty, Zach Galifianakis, who also introduces her as Kitty Softpaws, Salma Hayek. Named because she can take things without anyone even noticing they are gone, as she does frequently with Puss's hat, boots and money simply to tease him, and asks him to join them in finding the magic beans, planting them, and then getting the golden eggs which lie at the top. Now, I got a couple of laughs out of the trailer, but anyone who's heard me before will know just how much I dislike CGI films for kids, as they just seem so lazy, so I'm not going to be watching this one. Number two. Going straight in, we've got Tower Heist, which took $25 million. And it follows Josh, Ben Stiller, Charlie, Casey Affleck, Devereaux, Michael Pena, and Odessa, Gabourey Sidibe, employees of an exclusive apartment building who lose their pensions in the Ponzi scheme of Wall Street businessman Arthur Shaw, Alan Alda. The group enlists the aid of criminal called Slide, played by Eddie Murphy, and bankrupt businessman Mr. Fitzhugh, Matthew Broderick, to break into Shaw's apartment and steal back the money while avoiding the FBI in charge of this case, Claire Denham, Tia Leone. Tower Heist began as a development as early as 2005, based on an idea by Murphy that would star himself and an all-black cast of comedians as a heist group who robbed Trump Plaza. As the script developed and changed into an Ocean's 11-style caper, Murphy left the project. Ratner continued to develop the idea into what would eventually become Tower Heist, with Murphy later rejoining the production. Now, I saw the trailer for this, and I say, like I say, all the trailers for everything here today, on the show today, are on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. The trailer for this looks like it could go either way. It's got a great cast, but with Stiller, Murphy and Broderick, they could all be completely past their best. And we know for sure that Murphy hasn't made a decent film in over 20 years. Going in at number three, we've got a very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas. Now, 6 years have elapsed since Guantanamo Bay, leaving Harold and Kumar estranged from one another with very different families, friends and lives. When Kumar arrives on Harold's doorstep during the holiday season with a mysterious package in hand, he inadvertently burns down Harold's father-in-law's beloved Christmas tree. To fix the problem, Harold and Kumar embark on a mission through New York City to find the perfect Christmas tree, once again stumbling at every single turn. Now, I've never seen a Harold and Kumar film. This looks passable, but not essential. And at least they take the mickey out of the whole 3D business in movies as well, so that's something. Down to number four, we've got Paranormal Activity 3. Down to number five, we've got In Time. This one, welcome to a world where time has become the ultimate currency. You stop aging at 25, but there's a catch. You're genetically engineered to live only one more year, unless you can buy your way out of it. The rich earn decades at a time, remaining at looking at age 25, becoming essentially immortal, while the rest beg, borrow or steal enough hours to make it through the day. When a man from the wrong side of the tracks is falsely accused of murder, he is forced to go on the run with a beautiful hostage. Living minute to minute, the duo's love become a powerful tool in their war against the system. Starring Justin Timberlake, Amanda Seyfried and Cillian Murphy, this certainly has an intriguing premise and sounds like it's worth checking out, but I just don't rate Justin Timberlake as an actor, and the trailer all looks a little too light. Mark Kermode said it made the Adjustment Bureau look like Inception, and the Adjustment was superb and Inception was fantastic, so that doesn't bode well for In Time at all. Number six, we've got Footloose. Number seven, Real Steel. Number eight, we've got The Rum Diary, which is also out now in the UK, and this is a film based on the novel of the same name by Hunter S. Thompson. Directed by Bruce Robinson, filming was done in Puerto Rico in 2009 and marks Robinson's first film as a director in 19 years, his prior film being Jennifer 8, released in 92. Paul Kemp, Johnny Depp, is an itinerant journalist who grows tired of New York and America under the Eisenhower administration and travels to Puerto Rico to write for the San Juan Star. Kemp begins the habit of drinking rum and becomes obsessed with a woman named Sheno, played by Amber Heard. Now, watching the trailer, there's a lot of laughs to be had in all the right places, but I don't know whether it really seems to hang together as a movie, so it wouldn't be my first choice for the cinema. Also out, we've got number nine, we've got The Ides of March. That's the film with George Clooney and Ryan, try and get me Ryan's right, Ryan Gosling. Yeah, not Ryan Reynolds. Ryan Gosling, who seems to be in quite a lot of films these days. That does look good, that looks worth seeing. Number 10, Moneyball, that's a film with Brad Pitt about baseball, which just looks not interesting whatsoever. Probably if you're in America and you're into baseball, fine. But if you're in the UK, I can't see it doing big business over here. And I don't know whether it's got a release date over here yet. But there's your top 10 movie charts for this week. In a moment, we'll be having a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday. But first of all, have a bit of music. And we've got Split Enz and I Got You. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now in this section, we're going to have a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, starting with The Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 1. And in this highly anticipated next chapter of the blockbuster of the Twilight Saga, the newfound married bliss of Bella Swan, Kristen Stewart, and vampire Edward Cullen, Robert Pattinson, is cut short when a series of betrayals and misfortunes threatens to destroy their world. After their wedding, Bella and Edward travel to Rio de Janeiro for their honeymoon, where they finally give in to their passions. I'm sure they would have done that beforehand. Anyway, Bella soon discovers she's pregnant, and during a nearly fatal childbirth, Edward finally fulfills her wish to become immortal. But the arrival of their remarkable daughter, Renesmee, sets in motion the perilous chain of events that pits the Cullens and their allies against the Volturi, the fearsome council of vampire leaders, setting the stage for an all-out battle. The suspenseful and deeply romantic Breaking Dawn continues the epic tale of supernatural fantasy and passionate love that's made the Twilight Saga a worldwide phenomenon, it says here. Well, I've never seen a Twilight film in my life, nor do I have any inclination to do so. In this trailer, man turns into wolf, just as Bella is about to marry her man. But let's face it, it's not going to change anything. If you love the Twilight books and films, and are probably a teenage girl, then you'll see this regardless of anything I say. The end with that one. The end. then we have a film called Snowtown, in which 16-year-old Jamie lives with his mother, Elizabeth, and two younger brothers, Alex and Nicholas, in a housing trust home in Adelaide's northern suburbs. The home is but one of many sun-starved houses crammed together to cater for a disenfranchised society. Jamie longs for an escape from the violence and the hopelessness that surrounds him, and their salvation arrives in the form of John, a charismatic man who unexpectedly comes to his aid. As John spends more and more time with Jamie's family, Elizabeth and her boys begin to experience a stability and sense of family that they have never known. John moves from the role of Jamie's protector to that of a mentor, indoctrinating Jamie into his world, a world brimming with bigotry, righteousness, and malice. Now, the trailer for this looks to both set the scene and be very intriguing, so certainly looks like it's worth a watch, and amongst everything else out this week, it appears to be the best thing to see altogether. So yeah, I definitely recommend that one. That's called Snowtown. Also out this Friday, we've got How to Stop Being a Loser. Now, from Black and Blue Films, How to Stop Being a Loser follows James, Simon Phillips, a chap who is useless with women, but finds his luck changes under the tutorage of pickup artist and womanising guru, Ampersand, Craig Conway. But as James learns the dark art of seduction, he begins to wonder if Ampersand is all he appears to be, and questions what would truly make him happy in life. Hilarious chaos ensues in this deliciously warm London comedy in the tradition of Four Weddings and a Funeral. Dominic Burns directs this Brit comedy, which also boasts a fantastic ensemble cast, including Gemma Atkinson, Stephanie Leonidis, Martin Compston, Billy Murray, Colin Salmon, Martin Kemp, Sheridan Smith, Adele Silver, Colin Salmon, and Richard E. Grant. Before I saw the trailer, I didn't hold out much hope for it, but it kept up the pace and has great comic timing with snappy dialogue. So if we can maintain that for the duration, then they're certainly onto a winner with this one. Also out this week, there's a film called Justice. And again, all the trailers for these films are on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. Now this one, after his wife is assaulted, her husband enlists the services of a vigilante group to help him settle the score. It won't cost him anything financially, but in the future they will ask him to do them a favour in return. Now starring Nicolas Cage, January Jones from X-Men First Class, it also stars Jennifer Carpenter, who plays Deborah Morgan in Dexter, Guy Pearce, who's been pretty much everything these days, and Harold Perrineau, who's the wheelchair-bound Augustus Hill in Oz. That's what I remember him most from. And also Xander Berkeley, who's been in loads of things as well, especially first two series of 24. Last week saw the release of Trespass with Nicolas Cage, and this week, another action film. It looks interesting, but with also the possible, just possibly run-of-the-mill fare, as the favour they want him to do for them is kill someone. That's far from what he had in mind, and so ensues a chase as he tries to get away from them, and nothing seems to go his way from then on. But how can he resolve it? Well, like everyone else, you have to watch the film itself. Finally out this week, we've got a film called Welcome to the Rileys. Now, a married couple loses their 15-year-old daughter in a car accident after her and her boyfriend took off after Lois, the mother, goes looking for them. Doug, Lois's husband, later meets a young girl at a club who says she's 22 and a stripper, but later finds out she's a 16-year-old runaway. He tries to help her out by making the house nicer and teaching her proper language. Later, his wife meets the girl and becomes upset because she reminds her of her own daughter, but a prostitute. The couple try to help the girl make a better life for herself. Now, this one stars James Gandolfini and Melissa Leo as the couple, and Kristen Stewart as the runaway. This looks as far away from Twilight as you can get, but with quotes from several sources taking up space on the screen, and one of them being, "A tough emotional journey," It just looks utterly syrupy and dreadful. Even if this was the only film out this week, I couldn't recommend it. Just avoid. I mean, by all means, watch the trailer if you want to put yourself through that hell. I don't know. I don't even know where to start with that one. It's just appalling from start to finish. But watch the trailer and at least that'll save you £7, whatever it is these days, plus 2 hours of your life. Okay, so that's all your new cinema releases out this week. In a moment, we'll be taking a look at the new DVD releases. First of all, let's have a bit more music. And we're going to have Laura Branigan and Self Control. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Laura Branigan with Self Control. And you're back on Manchester's 106.6. And this is the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. Nearly forgot who was there for a second. But if I always forget, I could just always look in my pants where I'll probably find my sober name tag in. Anyway, enough of that. You probably didn't want to hear that. Got the DVDs out this week. Started with Bridesmaids. Universal Pictures and producer Judd Apatow from Knocked Up and The 40-Year-Old Virgin invite you to experience Bridesmaids. Kristen Wiig leads the cast as Annie, a maid of honour whose life unravels as she leads her best friend Lillian, Maya Rudolph, and a group of colourful bridesmaids, Rose Byrne, Melissa McCarthy, Wendy McClendon-Covey and Ellie Kemper, on a wild ride down to matrimony. Down the road to matrimony, even. Annie's life is a mess. When she finds out that her lifetime best friend is engaged, she simply must serve as Lillian's maid of honour. Though lovelorn and broke, Annie bluffs her way through the expensive and bizarre rituals. With one chance to get it perfect, she'll show Lillian and her bridesmaids just how far you'll go for someone you love. Oh. Now, the extras include unrated and extended feature. Well, that'd be if it was in America, but they always have to be rated over here. I think it's a 15 anyway. A gag reel, maid of honour behind the scenes of bridesmaids, and deleted scenes with scores more, so smaller featurettes. Well, at the time of the cinema release on Film 24 on BBC News, Jason Solomon said that when this comes out, it would be the funniest movie of the year so far. I can't see it from the trailer. It all looks rather laboured and over the top, so I'm going to pass. Also out, we've got Kung Fu Panda 2. Now, Po, voiced by Jack Black, is now living the dream as a dragon warrior, protecting the Valley of Peace alongside his friends and fellow Kung Fu masters. The Furious Five, Tigress, Crane, Mantis, Viper and Monkey. But Po's new life of awesomeness is threatened by the emergence of a formidable villain who plans to use a secret unstoppable weapon to destroy Kung Fu. It is up to Po and the Furious Five to journey across China to face this threat and vanquish it. But how can Po stop a weapon that can stop Kung Fu? Ooh. He must look to his past and uncover the secrets of the mysterious origins. Only then will he be able to unlock the strength he needs to succeed. Now, I have a bugbear at CGI films. They just seem to have no heart to them whatsoever, and I'm not going to be watching this one. Also, this week, we've got The Phantom of the Opera at Royal Albert Hall. Now, Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera is a worldwide entertainment phenomenon. It's been staged in 145 cities across 27 countries, and its box office sales eclipse Avatar, Titanic and Star Wars. Seen by over 130 million people, the stage show has never been able to own on DVD or Blu-ray. Until now, it says here. To celebrate its 25th anniversary year, Cameron Mackintosh presents Phantom of the Opera in a fully staged, lavish production set in the sumptuous Victorian splendour of the Royal Albert Hall. It also stars Ramin Karimloo as the Phantom and Sierra Bogues as Christine. They are joined by Barry James as Monsieur Firmin, Gareth Snook as Monsieur Andre, Liz Robertson as Madame Geary, Wynne Evans as Piangi, and a supporting cast and orchestra of over 200, plus some very special guest appearances. I hope it's not Michael Ball. God, he's irritating. Now, this is a spectacular once-in-a-lifetime staging of the world's biggest musical, and a must-have on DVD and Blu-ray fans for everywhere. So that's something you get your mum for Christmas, I think. Also, this week we've got Torchwood Miracle Day, which is the fourth series, and also there's a complete box set out as well. One day, nobody dies. All across the world, nobody dies. Day after day, the phenomenon continues, and a secret British institution named Torchwood seems to hold the answers. CIA agents Rex Matheson and Esther Drummond investigate the only two surviving members of the team, Gwen Cooper, who's retreated to a remote Welsh hideaway with her husband and new baby, and the mysterious, brilliant Captain Jack Harkness. But they soon find themselves on the same side, fighting the greatest threat to humanity ever known, humanity itself. Earth is filling up fast, resources are running out, and as history has shown, bad things happen when good people get desperate. Now, I tried to watch this when it was on TV, despite only ever having watched the first two episodes from Series 1. The first two episodes of this one just went really slowly, and I gave up during the third. In fact, it was only went back to the final episode just to see how it all turned out, and what a load of old rubbish that was. So there's not a lot to recommend, really, out of all them. Other new releases out this week, we've got Beginners, Larry Crown, which has got, what's his name, Tom Hanks. Marley and Me, The Puppy Years. Oh, give me a break. Outrage, Red Line, Witchfinder General, digitally remastered special edition. Oddly, only on DVD. Would have thought they'd do a Blu-ray of that. Some TV series. We've got Benidorm Series 4, Brothers and Sisters Season 5, Community Season 1, The Gentle Touch Series 5, The Jury, which is on BBC for a week recently, Phone Shop, which I saw a couple of episodes of that. Appalling. Just give it a wide berth. Well, the Series 2 is on now, so yeah, just avoid it. Strike Back, Project Dawn. There's also some Blu-ray premieres. We've got Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, The Firm. We've got Quadrophenia, Silent Running, Touch of Evil, and also there's in 3D, we've got all three Toy Story films, which are all out for the rather extortionate $17.99. But, no doubt there's probably a box set of them as well. Okay, so that's all your new DVD releases out this week. So in a moment we'll be having a look at some film news. But first of all, have a bit of music from Haircut 100, who want to tell you about their favourite shirt. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Hey Little Girl by Icehouse. And before that you had Haircut 100 telling you about their favourite shirt. And now for the last bit of the to get to the top of the hour, we've got some film news. We start off with the news that George Clooney hopes Alfonso Cuarón's Gravity is the last time he has to do a 3D movie. While 2011 has been marked by the number of high-profile projects that have been iced, such as Dark Tower and At the Mountains of Madness, among the biggest, Alfonso Cuarón mysteriously avoided the same fate when last year his ambitious sci-fi tale Gravity looked like it was about to crash against the rocks. Angela Jolie was first attached, initially kicking the project to life. She then bailed on a broad array of talent, including Marion Cotillard, Scarlett Johansson, Blake Lively, and Natalie Portman were loosely associated and or rumoured for the role before the Blindside star Sandra Bullock stepped in. Things again stalled when co-star Robert Downey Jr. had to bail to make The Avengers, once more leaving the project in doubt until George Clooney stepped in to save the day. But perhaps he didn't know what he was in for. The 3D film was long rumoured to be a project that would be 60% CGI with a 20-minute opening shot, with Guillermo del Toro recently marvelling that the production was 5 years ahead of its time. But it seems all this technical wizardry didn't exactly endear Clooney, who was in no hurry to go back to being filmed in three dimensions. Sorry. It's the first time I've been in 3D, and hopefully the last time, he told USA Today. And though he hasn't actually seen it, he updates that it's not near ready yet. They just showed the first cut to the studio. So don't bother calling Clooney for anything, James Cameron. And while the movie has a primo full release date pegged for next year, it was also thought to be a weird fit considering, at least in the draft we read, the film is a straightforward action sci-fi picture, albeit utilising long stretches of silence. However, Clooney intones one of the greatest sci-fi movies of all time as a comparison point. It's a two-hander with the only two actors in the whole film, he says. It's a very odd film, really. Two people in space, no monsters. It's more like 2001 than an action film. I doubt it can be as good, though. But take that suggestion with a grain of salt. It's an accessible genre piece, and the film is more in feel to something like a space-bound 127 hours. I hope that doesn't make you like Sunshine, which was good for the first two-thirds and then fell apart. Set on a remote space station, the story begins as a team of astronauts are on an expedition outside the station. But the only team leader, Clooney, and his female colleague, Bullock, are left alive after exploding satellite kills the other members of the crew, setting off a desperate race home for the latter to get to a child. So yeah, not exactly a mind-bending narrative, but a propulsive yet quasi-experimental piece. It will certainly be one of the brainier blockbusters of the year that you're likely to see. But still a rather long wait for this one, because it doesn't hit theatres until November 21st next year. I've also got the news that Guy Pearce and Ben Foster and Kelly MacDonald are to star in Steve Buscemi's adaptation of Queer. Steve Buscemi has lined up quite the cast for his next directorial effort. The Boardwalk Empire actor is poised to direct an adaptation of William Burroughs' novel Queer, and Vulture reports that Guy Pearce, Ben Foster, and Buscemi's Boardwalk Empire co-star Kelly MacDonald are set to star. The book was written in 1952, and after Burroughs accidentally shot and killed his wife, that happened. The story, which mirrors Burroughs' emotional and psychological state at the time, centres on an American named William Lee, living in Mexico City, weighed down by drugs, guilt and lust. The project is still in the early stages, and financing isn't yet firmed up, but Rampart director Oren Moverman wrote the script and told Vulture that the plan is to shoot the film during Buscemi's next hiatus from HBO's Boardwalk Empire. Here's a synopsis. In an introduction, Burroughs observes that he wrote this heretofore unpublished picaresque novel in 1951, well before Naked Lunch established his reputation. He reveals that the book had its genesis in a terrible event, his accidental shooting to death of his wife, Joan, a tragedy that released the black wellsprings of his talent. The narrative recounts the hallucinatory life of William Lee, an American in Mexico City in the 1940s, and his journey to Ecuador with his reluctant lover, Eugene Allerton, in search of the drug Yage. Lee is Burroughs after the killing, weighed down by guilt, drugs, lust and despair, seeking Lee. Admirers will find the early exposition of Burroughs' later themes here, as well as a strain of gallows humour. The work is almost cinematic as it unfolds, and the author is not yet experimenting with the meaninglessness of language, and it is indeed it is thin in both thought and expression. We've also got the news that Sony Pictures is acquiring screen rights to Berserk, the first in a three-book series by Michael Grant. Project is being acquired for Sam Raimi and Josh Donen at Stars Road. The title, which got a strong response recently at Frankfurt, will be published next year by Egmont. Grant, who wrote Gone and co-created the Animorphs series, has written a youth-orientated tale with an ambitious premise. A team of gifted teens control biological nanobot robots warriors, and they battle another group that is controlled by conjoined twins whose nanobots are brainwashing world leaders. The megalomaniac twins are trying to take over the world, and CAA is brokering the deal. Okay, so that's all your film stuff for this week. In a moment, well, after the news, we'll be having some video game stuff, of course, with a review of the part 2 of the Sega Dreamcast collection on the Xbox 360. First of all, have a bit of music, and we've got the Blow Monkeys, It Doesn't Have to Be This Way. This is 106.6.
106.6.
And this second hour, we're going to start off with some video game stuff, starting with a review of the Sega Dreamcast Collection Part 2 on the Xbox 360. And we'll have the top 10 games charts, some new video games releases out this Friday, plus some video games news. Also, on some TV stuff in the second, in the last half hour of the show, we have a look back at Rev and Life's Too Short, look ahead to some more programs coming up, and also some TV news. Now I'm going to start with a review of Sega Dreamcast Collection on the Xbox 360, and this is part 2. And the Dreamcast Collection is 4 Xbox Live arcade titles brought together in one package. Now, last week I looked at Crazy Taxi, which I gave 8 out of 10, and Sonic Adventure, which was only worth a lowly 4 out of 10. Now, the third game on this disc is Space Channel 5 Part 2, a title that wasn't actually released in the UK, and which does get an HD version in this package. You take on the role of Ooh La La. I'm sure they made that up. Well, it's a video game, of course they made it up. A space-age female TV presenter and dance diva who has to be the queen of the disco scene. Ooh, it rhymes. Like the original, although with a longer campaign than that one, it's basically a Parappa the Rapper-style affair in which getting hip to the beat and landing on your feet may be the key to success. Keep in time with the music, breakdance better than the invading aliens, rescue their dancing hostages, and boost your TV ratings. And that's just about it. It's a novelty game which was fine when Parappa was released, since it was a genre to which we'd only just been introduced. And by the time the first game reached the Dreamcast, it was getting rather long in the tooth, and an alternative title would have been a better bet. However, it's an effective UK premiere, so you can't take that away from it. And for me, 5 out of 10. The package is completed with Sega Bass Fishing, a conversion of the arcade game. Does it pitch you against aliens in an intergalactic trade war full of gore and violence with mad bad guys that shout stars at you? No. It sticks you in a boat and pitches you against fish, and very stupid ones at that. You know the type, the ones that have memory span of a memory span of something or other. Can't remember now. Anyway, the graphics are fine, but the sound is rather a disappointment. Cast your bait into the water, splosh, and wiggle it about a bit. I'll let you imagine that one. And if there's one thing that saves the game, it's great playability. Something this game knows very little about when trying to play it with a joypad. Move the buttons about and it's basically guesswork as to how you're doing. Even when I got the original Dreamcast game for review, I never managed to get hold of a virtual fishing rod, although there isn't one for this release anyway. It's weird. You're looking at the fish, looking at your bait, thinking about them in human terms and how they perceive the bait as you and its movement as you wiggle it. However, they're completely thick, and they'll follow it anyway if they're hungry enough. But they're not hungry. They're CGI fish, not living, breathing bits of flesh, floating in the blue yonder. I admit I did get a bit of excitement as I tried to reel in a fish on a couple of occasions, since the more you reel it in, and the fish struggles, the more the line tensionometer increases. Reel constantly, and it'll snap. But ease off a bit, and the bar will go down again, allowing you to try reeling in again. However, in real life, such things aren't thought of in such definite terms. The line's either in one piece, in which you carry on, or it snaps, in which case you go home or thread another line. The idea, of course, is to catch as many fish as possible and catch the heaviest ones possible. Bigger fish equals more points. And what do points make? Yes, a high score, not prizes. The only amusing thing about the game is that the voiceover, as you can hear on the game clip, which I've put some videos on, look for DVD Fever Games on YouTube. The voice on the game sounds a bit quite like the excellent German comedian Henning Vane. So, yeah, well worth a listen just for that. As the game itself, overall, Sega Bass Fishing just scores 2 out of 10. So, overall, the whole package scores 5 out of 10. And yes, there are only 4 games on the disc, but then each Dreamcast game was always on a disc that held more capacity than a normal CD anyway, and sometimes up to a full gigabyte. So you are getting nearly a full DVD's worth here for your money. Okay, so that's your game review for this week, and in a moment we'll have a look at the top 10 games charts and also some new video games releases coming out this Friday. But first of all, we'll have a bit of music, and we're going to have Tears for Fears and Pale Shelter. This is 106.6. 106.6. Now in this section we'll be taking a look at the top 10 games charts, plus a look at some of the new video games releases coming out this Friday. So first of all, the top 10 games charts, we've got Battlefield 3 at number 1. Then we've got Uncharted 3. Drake's Deception at number 2. Then we've got FIFA 12 at number 3. Batman Arkham City at number 4. Just Dance 3 Special Edition at number 5. Number 6, we've got Football Manager 2012. And number 7, Forza Motorsport 4. Number 8, hanging in there, we've got Zumba Fitness. And number 9, Skylanders Spyro's Adventure. And number 10, a new entry for Sonic Generations, which is like a just compilation of many different Sonic games. So just more, well, just trying to get your money out of it here once again, I guess. There's some other new entries in the top 40. We've got GoldenEye Reloaded at number 16, Disney Universe at 25, and the not very intriguingly named at number 33, Let's Draw. It's also two re-entries, number 38 for Wii Party, and number 40 for The Gunstringer. There are some new DVD releases. We did that already last hour. Where's my brain today? Got some new video games releases coming out this Friday, starting with Saints Row the Third. Now rejoin the ranks of the most unholy saints around as you return to the row to experience gang life post-fame. Kids are kicking round in Saints sneakers. Tough guy hopefuls are slurping Saints energy drinks, and store owners are proudly displaying Johnny Gat bobbleheads on their top shelves. Celebrity status has hit, but will the Saints survive the newfound glory unscathed? In Saints Row the Third, fame and fortune come at a bittersweet price for the kings of Stillwater. Faced with serious demands from the legendary criminal fraternity, the Syndicate, the Saints must hit the streets of Steelport to trample their new rivals and defend their status. Get ready for intense action, grueling gang violence, and outlandish situations to spare as you take on a decaying city of sin in an all-new battle with the Saints. Buckle up and take a massive tank on a wild ride through the sky. Duke it out against trained military forces and call in a strategic airstrike on a Mexican wrestling gang. With grit and guts galore, you and your gang will never kneel to an enemy. After all, just because you're a saint doesn't mean you have to behave. I've not played any of those games. Never managed to get them for review, and they just sort of completely passed me by. But I know one mate did say he prefers them to the GTA game, so I don't know. If I can get hold of it for review, I'll let you know what I think. But I don't know. I still prefer Grand Theft Auto, although obviously number 5 isn't due out until next summer. Also out this week, we've got Lego Harry Potter Years 5 to 7, which is out on the Xbox 360. Oh, by the way, that was out on Saints Row the Third, out on Xbox 360, PS3 and PC. There's Lego Harry Potter Years to 5 is out on all of those, plus the PSP, the Vita when that comes out, the Wii, the DS and the 3DS. Now, LEGO Harry Potter's gameplay is similar to that of most previous LEGO games, with an emphasis on collecting and exploring. Casting spells is an integral part of the gameplay, with a wide range of spells available for unlocking as the player progresses. As there are many spells available in the game, the player can use a spell wheel to select the spell. Potion making is another integral feature. Potions can help the player complete levels, or, if created incorrectly, have adverse side effects such as turning the player into a frog. The game covers a wide range of characters of the last 3 books and 4 films, and the game employs 2-player split-screen technique introduced in LEGO Indiana Jones 2, The Adventure Continues. Also out this week, we've got Need for Speed The Run on the Xbox 360 and PS3. Now, it's called The Run, an illicit high-stakes race across the country. The only way to get your life back is to be the first from San Francisco to New York. No speed limits, no rules, no allies. All you have are your driving skills and sheer determination as you battle hundreds of the world's most notorious drivers down the country's most dangerous roads. In Need for Speed The Run, you'll weave through dense urban centres, rocket down icy mountain passes, and navigate narrow canyons at breakneck speeds, all the while invading a relentless police force prepared and willing to use lethal force to take you down. Jack is in a race for life, but he's got something that the competition doesn't. You. Keep Jack one step ahead of the dangers from his dark past, both inside and outside the car, and it's up to you to get Jack to New York in one piece and ahead of the competition. The powerful new Frostbite 2 engine, created by the award-winning DICE Studio, advances technical achievements to deliver a gameplay experience with an unprecedented level of visual detail, environmental immersion, and emotional impact. Now, I've not played one of these games for ages, and I didn't think much of it then, but I've seen a trailer for this, and this does look pretty interesting, so I think I might try and get hold of this one. Okay, so that's all your top 10 game charts on your new video games released out this Friday. In a moment, we'll have a look at some video games news, but first of all, we'll have a bit of music. We'll have Dire Straits, Money for Nothing. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, in this segment, we're going to be taking a look at some video games news, starting with the news that Steven Spielberg's DreamWorks studio reportedly passed on the opportunity to film an adaptation of popular video game franchise Assassin's Creed due to the unprecedented amount of creative control demanded by publisher Ubisoft. Recently, it emerged that Sony Pictures was in final negotiations to develop a film based on the series. However, Vulture claims that Ubisoft's heavy demands put off a number of studios. The report says that Ubisoft has insisted on having approval over the film's budget, principal cast, script and release date. They want to be able to pull the plug on the whole movie's development if they decide to. It's ridiculous, one unnamed studio source said. Another added, they're not movie makers, and it's the only way to ensure it's a bad movie, is to undervalue what movie studios do. It's believed that Spielberg's DreamWorks was among the first studios to pass on the proposed adaptation. Assassin's Creed Revelations, the fourth game in the franchise, is out today on Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. There's also the news that Super Mario 3D Land will include a firmware update for the Nintendo 3DS on the game cartridge itself. Now, the firmware update adds a new join game function to the 3DS friends list, making it easier for users to connect for playing multiplayer games. The update also includes improved anti-piracy protection against using flashcards in a Nintendo 3DS, and the firmware update will be required before users can play Super Mario 3D Land. This is separate from the planned November 3DS firmware update, which will add a 3D video capture feature, new Street Pass content, and a redesign for the 3DS eShop. Super Mario 3D Land will be released for the Nintendo 3DS. Well, it's actually came out on November the 13th in North America, and it's out this Friday in Europe. There's also the news that the Xbox 360 sales have passed 57 million worldwide. Microsoft's Major Nelson, is that a real name? Announced via Twitter that the console has surpassed the figure following a successful fiscal quarter. The platform holder recently revealed that the Xbox 360 shifted more than 2.3 million units during the last quarter and was the best-selling console during the last 9 months. Sony recently reported that it has moved 55.5 million PlayStation 3s during the platform's lifecycle, putting Microsoft machines ahead by nearly 2 million units. However, it should be noted that the Xbox 360 has been on the market for a year longer. Nintendo's Wii has sold significantly more units than its competitors, with 89 million consoles shifted worldwide, and the platform launched around the same period as the PS3. And Nintendo will be the first of the big three to release a new home console next year when it launches the Wii U. That's still a terrible name, I think. Yeah, Wii U. How many board meetings do they have to come up with that one? I bet they didn't even have one. Also, the news that Joe Danger Special Edition has been announced for Xbox Live Arcade. The port of the PlayStation Network title will feature new environments, modes, characters, and added variety, according to Eurogamer. Developer Hello Games said that it will be out, quote-unquote, surprisingly soon, hinting at a release date before the end of the year. It's been so nice to come back to Joe Danger, now that we've watched hundreds of thousands of people play through on the PS3, said Hello Games' Sean Murray. They've been our playtesters for the changes we've made to the special edition. Like, Joe Danger was well received and everything, but my God, there were things we didn't like about it. There were places where it was actually pretty frustrating to play, or confusing to play, and I really think we've ironed that out, they said. Hello Games is also developing a sequel entitled Joe Danger the Movie, which will feature new vehicles and release on multiple platforms. Now, I've never heard of this game before, before seeing this news. It actually looks a pretty intriguing kind of game. It's just a basic sort of moving along from left to right, but in a bit of a 3D levels on Little Big Planet, when you've got to like race a motorbike over a big jump. I think this could be quite entertaining. Sort of, not expensive, but just a nice little bit of entertainment. Probably better than a lot of full price releases out there, to be honest. Okay, so that's everything to do with video games for this week. In a moment, we'll be having some TV programs out, that have been broadcast in the past week. But before that, we'll have a bit of music and we'll have New Shoes and I Can't Wait. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, in this last half hour of the show, we'll be looking at some TV stuff, starting with some TV programs watched in the past week. Then look ahead, some more coming up. And finally, some TV news. So we're going to start off with, watched Rev Series 2 on Thursday at 9 o'clock on BBC Two. Thursday, most likely a six-part series, I think. I mean, the last one was a six-part series. It's a sitcom about a vicar running an inner-city church. Now, this episode, the Reverend Adam Smallbone's life in his London parish hasn't got any easier. His flock are just as demanding, and his wife Alex has reached breaking point. So when Adam unwittingly thwarts a mugging, he's tempted to bask in the novelty of being hailed as super vicar, instead of being the usual clergy baiting and enjoy Alex's renewed attraction to a hero husband. As his lie spirals out of control, Adam draws attention from on high. It stars Tom Hollander, Olivia Colman, Steve Evans, Miles Jupp, Lucy Lehman, and Simon McBurney. Now, I love the first series. It had some clever writing and some nicely underplayed comedy. So I thought, this it does come highly recommended. But this time around, the program focused pretty much solely on Adam being a have-a-go hero and whether or not he should accept it, as he just tripped the bad guy up accidentally and then helped him onto the bus where he escaped. In the end, he met up with Ralph Fiennes playing the vicar, who would present Adam with the award. But as soon as Adam spills the beans, Ralph agrees he should jack it in. And that was it. For a first new episode, it was a bit of a damp squib. Hopefully the rest of the series will pep it up a bit. So I say it's back on BBC Two, Thursday at 9 o'clock. Also, on this week, we've got Life's Too Short. And that was on Thursday at 9... Well, it's at 9.30, so straight after Rev. So it's going to be every week. It's a comedy series featuring Warwick Davis. Now, with his career on the slide, a massive tax bill, and his wife divorcing him, showbiz dwarf Warwick Davis is forced to open his doors to a film crew 24/7. He seeks advice from old pals Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant, but Liam Neeson has beaten him to it. Also starring Joanne Wright and Rosamund Hanson, I was intrigued by this, as Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant can often get a TV series spot on, such as with the extras in The Office. I find it's when they introduce Carl Pilkington into the proceedings that it does tend to fall apart. Now, when it came to the broadcast, it was basically laugh-free. Warwick plays a bit of an OTT version of himself, with everyone turning him down for work and him claiming to be a massively famous actor, where not that many people will have actually heard of him. He also stated he was an agent for other dwarves and trying to pay forward the success that he has had, but his first appointment was to hire a normal height woman as his secretary. Next up, he did actually audition two dwarves, but rejected them as one of them blacked up as Stevie Wonder, so they could duet on Ebony and Ivory. Ebony and Ivory. So, I mean, it's just like, sounds like the kind of thing that Ricky Gervais would put in his comedies, just trying to be controversial for the sake of it. And this was followed by a meeting with his useless accountant, who would screw things up so bad that Warwick would have to earn over £300,000 in a short amount of time to pay back the inland revenue what he owed them. And later on, while Warwick went to see Ricky and Steve at one point, Liam Neeson came in and told him that he wanted to try his hand at comedy, something which did him no favours at all, as he has no idea how to go about it. Okay, so that's the joke. But like the rest of this programme, while I was really looking forward to it, it really fell flat and was very disappointing. I'll certainly try another episode, but if that doesn't improve, then I'm just going to pass on the rest, I'm afraid. Okay, so that's TV stuff that was on this week. Have a look ahead to some new shows coming up, including Pan Am. So, but first of all, have a bit of music, and we're going to have Crush and House Arrest. This is 106.6.
106.6.
In this section, we'll just have a look at a couple of new programmes coming up this week, well, in the coming week, starting with Pan Am, which is on tomorrow night at 9 o'clock on BBC Two, and there's two episodes to start off the series. First episode is simply called Pilot. Now, it's a US drama series set in the 1960s, centred around Pan American World Airways. It is the inaugural flight of the new Pan Am jet Clipper Majestic from New York to London. New stewardess Laura had been put on the flight after running away from a wedding and following her sister Kate into the Pan Am uniform. Unbeknown to Laura, Kate has been recruited as a spy for the CIA and faces a dangerous first assignment on the flight. And the team's British lead stewardess, Bridget, hasn't shown up for takeoff, so feisty Maggie has to dash across New York to take charge in time for takeoff. New Captain Dean is anxious to find Bridget, but even when they arrive in London, she's nowhere to be seen. Now, this new series stars Christina Ricci, Margaret Robbie, Michael Mosley, Karen Vanessi, Mike Vogel and Kelly Garner. So that's the first episode. As I say, there's two episodes coming straight together. Starting off with We Will Always... Well, the second episode is called We'll Always Have Paris. Now, a stop-off in Paris brings intrigue for everyone. Laura and Kate are horrified to find that their mother has booked a seat on their flight to try and persuade Laura to reconsider marriage to Greg. Maggie has to fight off the unwanted attentions of a drunk passenger and is disappointed by Ted's handling of the situation. Dean is determined to use his time in Paris to find out why Bridget has disappeared, retracing their steps last time when they were in Paris with the help of Colette. Meanwhile, Kate has had to make her first secret CIA drop-off and is surprised by the identity of her contact in Paris. So that's Pan Am. So there's two episodes starting on 9 o'clock tomorrow night on BBC Two. Now, the I was going to talk this week about Comedy Lab Kabadasses, which was the last in the series, but I'll come to why I'm not reviewing that one in this particular show just yet. Anyway, the basis behind it is that Bobby is a lovable dreamer with high hopes and no prospects. When his domineering girlfriend Shobna throws him out, Bobby finds himself back at his dad's with his tail between his legs. His father, Latte, the Thamesmead cappuccino king, disapproves of Bobby's slacker lifestyle and thinks his dear departed wife spoiled the boy. Bobby and his best mate Vin, a thug with a heart, decide that their best shot at redemption is to set up the world's first all-white English kabaddi team. Obviously with a makeshift squad and no idea of the rules, Bobby realizes that they need help. They find it in the shape of the Marauding Moustache, a legend in the East London League and a cross between Mr. Miyagi and Homer Simpson. Now, I haven't had a chance to see this yet, but since the remaining three episodes of Comedy Lab have come in sort of partly while I've been sort of away from the show for a couple of weeks, I'm going to take a look at all three of them next week. So there's, what are they called? There's Mr. and Mrs. Hottie Hottie Hot Show, I think Badasses, and the third one, which completely escapes me what it was called, but that's a surprise for you for next week. I just thought it's also rather odd that they've been brought in under the radar by sticking them in so late on a Sunday night, as if, they were embarrassed by them. That said, I mean, the rest of the series before this hasn't exactly been stellar, and the Comedy Showcase series has yet to return, but Ben Miller was on Breakfast recently saying that his pilot with Alexander Armstrong, called Felix and Murdo, will air in the new year. Okay, so that's some programmes coming up this week. So we've got Pan Am tomorrow on BBC Two at 9 o'clock, with two episodes, and I'll be having a look at the all three Comedy Labs that have been on when it returned. In a moment, we're having some TV news, but first of all, I have a bit of music from the Human League, and Tell Me When. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Now, in this last section, we look at some TV news, starting with the news that Neil Malarkey is to run a Twitter-powered improv show. Now, Neil Malarkey, star of Whose Line Is It Anyway?, Austin Powers, and the Comedy Store Players, is returning with a new comedy improv show with a difference. 140 characters, as its name suggests, will be the first ever improv event where the topics will be suggested by users on Twitter. The show will be broadcast live each week on Mondays at something called 140characters.tv, which is part of Internet Week Europe. Visitors to the official website can also submit sound effects and photos that might be used during the performance, and the organisers are also inviting participation through their at 140characters TV Twitter account. There'll also be a live audience on the night, but in keeping with the theme, only 140 people will be allowed in. There's also a star cast has been announced for Channel 4's upcoming newspaper satire, Hacks. The one-off hour-long comedy will be broadcast in the channel's Christmas schedule and has been written by outnumbered and Drop the Dead Donkey, where are my teeth today, writer and creator Guy Jenkin. Inspired by the notorious hacking scandals that engulfed the British Dead Tree Press earlier this year, Hacks, a working title, is set in the newsroom of a fictional newspaper where the pressure to get a story and beat the competitors is intense. The programme is to star Claire Foy as paper editor Kate Loy, a woman whose moral compass went awry a long time ago, with owner Stanhope Feast, played by Michael Kitchen. The duo are best known for their lead roles in Little Dorrit and Foyle's War, respectively. Other names announced for the cast include Alexander Armstrong, who will also star in sitcom pilot Felix and Murdo with comedy partner Ben Miller on Channel 4 over the festive period, Phonejacker star Kayvan Novak, and Phil Davis. Comedy veterans Celia Imrie, Russ Abbott, and Nigel Planer also have roles in the Hattrick produced comedy. There's also the news that the Inbetweeners sequel won't be driven by money. By Murray? By money, says Greg Davis. The comedian, who played Mr. Gilbert in the sitcom and the movie spin-off, said that Ian Morris and Damon Beasley will only return to the characters if they are confident about making something good. I would imagine there'd be a lot of pressure on people if there's that amount of interest and financial backing, Davis said. Knowing the writers, I don't think they would do something for those reasons. I think they'd only put pen to paper if they thought it would be good. That's why it's good. How insightful. The writers and the cast of the show recently laughed off rumours that a sequel is already being planned. Now, the Inbetweeners movie took more than £20 million at the UK box office in its first week of release, and Davis added to the film's success, "I'm just like a kid in all this, really. I'm just so excited to be a part of it. It's a cliche, but it's true. I'm just so thrilled to be a part of it. I never dreamt I would be in a film, even walking in the background uninvited. And nobody ever thought I'd actually make it into an actual film in the cinema. It's just brilliant. It's so exciting to be a part of." Greg Davis also released his stand-up DVD, Firing Cheeseballs at a Dog, yesterday. Finally, we've got the news that Russell Tovey says that Being Human fans are incredible. Tovey said, "Sci-fi fans are the best fans you can have. You could be doing the worst piece of tat, which might have a robot or a vampire in, and some people will become obsessed by it and know every little detail. Being Human has crossed over from sci-fi fans to being a drama that everyone can enjoy." Asked about fan conventions, he added, "I did Comic-Con in the US, which is the big one, where everyone goes crazy, and we've done signings across Britain. The fans are amazing." Oh, my voice is going. Must be all the emotion. "The fans are amazing. They appreciate what we do. You make the shows, and you don't realise how much they can move and affect people." Tovey has previously quipped that his personal fan base is made up of middle-aged, balding gay men. Of the impenetrability of some cult shows after the first series, he said, "You want to stick with the series. The characters have their own story arcs, but you can also dip in and watch individual episodes. There's a new guest character in most episodes, which keeps it fresh as well." And Tovey recently filmed a guest role as Henry Knight in the second series of BBC's Sherlock. Okay, so that's the end of the show for this week. Be sure to check out all the trailer links and any gaming footage that I mentioned during this show. They're on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. Okay. To take us up to the top of the hour, I'll say we'll be back next week with more, but to take us to the top of the hour, we'll have a couple of tunes, starting off with, let's have a bit of Genesis and Turn It On Again. This is 106.6. 106.6.